We are going to talk about celiac disease this hour. What it is, what it does, how it's diagnosed and treated, and how people with it manage to eliminate gluten found in wheat and many grains from their diets. Do you have celiac disease or know someone who does? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, September 12th. We are following up on a listener suggestion this hour, a listener who thought it would be a timely and important show. And since Celiac Disease Awareness Day is tomorrow, we thought we would. We agreed and we contacted an expert to improve our awareness of this autoimmune disease. And we'll welcome your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Marilyn Geller. She is the CEO of the Celiac Disease Foundation, and she joins us from the West Coast very early this morning, so we thank her very much for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what exactly is celiac disease?
Well, celiac disease is actually one of the world's most prevalent genetic autoimmune disorders, affecting about 1 in 100 people worldwide. And it is an autoimmune disorder of the small intestine where when people ingest gluten, which is a protein found in wheat, rye, or barley, it actually creates a toxic effect. And there are these little finger-like projections in the small intestine called villi. And those are what are used to actually absorb our nutrients. So when people with celiac disease eat gluten, the gluten creates a toxic effect. It actually kills off these villi, and it makes it impossible for people with celiac disease to actually absorb the nutrients that they're eating.
Well, that's quite serious, isn't it?
It's very serious.
Yes, I think a lot of people might be under the impression that it's, you know, you get an upset stomach if you eat bread. It's a lot worse than that. What are the consequences of having undiagnosed celiac disease?
Well, the long effects are really that the body starts to shut down because the organs aren't getting the nutrients. So we see anemia, osteoporosis, epilepsy, migraine, infertility, and even lymphoma and intestinal cancers.
Yeah. What are the symptoms that you might have celiac disease?
Well, you know, it's very tricky because there's about 300 symptoms that are associated with celiac disease. In children, it is more of the classic gastrointestinal symptoms, the stomach aches, the constipation, the diarrhea. But in adults, it's more silent, and you find things like anemia and osteoporosis and fatigue, not those stomach symptoms. So it's a little difficult to diagnose when you're an adult.
Yeah. Well, is this something that you typically get as a child, or when do you get it?
You know, the average age right now that they're diagnosing people at is age 50. But it's taking, on average, about 17 years of symptoms or pseudo-symptoms for people to be diagnosed.
Why is it taking so long?
You know, it's just because physicians were trained in medical school years ago that the classic symptoms of celiac disease were the bloated belly, the skinny limbs, the gastrointestinal, and since those really aren't the symptoms in adults, it's being missed.
So I did have a niece who had various symptoms. She had gastrointestinal issues. She also had rashes, and she did test positive for some aspect of celiac disease. How do you diagnose it?
Well, you know, there is a skin manifestation called dermatitis herpetiformis, so that is one of the symptoms. It actually is a very simple blood test, and that's actually the reason why it's such a travesty that people aren't diagnosed. There's over 3 million Americans with celiac disease in this country, and it's estimated that only about 500,000 people have actually been diagnosed. And again, there is a simple blood test that your physician can order, and that's the first step in diagnosis. But you have to be eating gluten for that test to work.
Yeah, and are there certain, so there's just the one blood test and it says you have it or you don't, or are there certain markers they're looking for? Because that's, I'm just confused.
Well, the blood test is the first screening tool. Then if the blood test is positive, your physician may recommend that you see a gastroenterologist and have a confirming biopsy of the small intestine. And that's a very quick procedure. My son had it at age 15, so as a mother I was very nervous, but he was literally in and out in 15 minutes. And they put a scope down through the throat, and they snip a little piece of the small intestine off, a few pieces, and that's how they actually confirm it.
Oh, all right. So there is there's a follow-up to confirm it. So your son has celiac disease.
He does, and he actually had symptoms from near birth, and it wasn't until he was 15 that he was actually diagnosed. And we're from Los Angeles, so he saw allergists, and he saw ENTs, and he saw his primary care physician, his pediatrician, years and years and years of tests and hospitalizations, but it wasn't until he was 15 that somebody finally requested the celiac disease blood test, and then lo and behold, there it was, a very simple solution. He had the quick biopsy, it was confirmed, and, you know, it should have been diagnosed years and years earlier.
Yeah.
And he did have those classic GI symptoms.
So what's the treatment?
Well, the treatment right now is a strict gluten-free diet. There is no cure. There is no medication. So by strict, I mean zero cross-contamination. If you go into, say, a sub-sandwich shop and you ask the person to prepare you a salad and they used the same gloves that they had used to actually touch the bread and they touched your lettuce, that level of cross-contamination can cause symptoms and damage to the gut.
Wow, well, that's pretty hard to follow a totally gluten-free diet, isn't it?
It is difficult.
Yeah, but there are more and more products that are, they're advertising themselves to be gluten-free, so there's a growing market for this.
There is, and, you know, 5 years ago, it would have been difficult to walk into a mainstream grocery store and see gluten-free products. And now you can go in, and on your shelves are substitutes for pasta and for bread and for cereal. So it's become much, much easier. And the best part is that the FDA just came out with a ruling defining the standard of what gluten-free is, so that by October of 2014, for people with celiac disease or what we call gluten sensitivity, when they go into the grocery store and they see products labeled gluten-free, they can actually be assured that those products are safe for them to eat.
Oh, all right. So the FDA has standards that must be adhered to before you can put that label on as of 2014.
As of October 2014, yeah.
Well, a listener on Twitter asks, can other conditions cause gluten sensitivity?
Right. So the way that the spectrum works is if you do not have celiac disease and you do not have a wheat allergy, and so you can go to your allergist and have the test for wheat allergy, and you eliminate gluten from your diet and you feel better, then you are diagnosed with what is now known as non-celiac gluten sensitivity. So there's a whole population of people out there. It's estimated that it's anywhere from 4 to 18% of the population who actually benefits from not eating gluten.
Yeah, and so what is the gluten sensitivity is similar to the symptoms of celiac disease but not as serious?
You know, it's not only similar, sometimes the symptoms are more pronounced because with a lot of those people with celiac disease, the symptoms are silent or they're things like osteoporosis or anemia where you don't immediately think about, you know, the stomach aches. But for the people with gluten sensitivity, a lot of them have, you know, very, very severe symptoms with the gastrointestinal and headaches and fatigue, and eliminating the gluten from their diet makes those symptoms go away. The difference for them is that when they ingest gluten, they're actually not damaging their gut like you do in celiac disease, but again, those symptoms are very, very pronounced.
Yeah. So do you advocate for them as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So our Twitter listener wants to also know, how much is genetically modified grains a factor in this?
You know, there's a lot of research out right now. Nothing has been put out conclusively, but certainly that's an avenue of research.
So do we know what exactly causes someone to have this gluten sensitivity or celiac disease?
Well, with celiac disease, you are genetically predetermined. So there's about 40% of the country actually carries the gene for celiac disease, and there is a genetic test that you can do. But we do not know right now the mechanism that makes those people who are genetically predetermined actually end up with celiac disease. A lot of theories, but no real knowledge right now.
We are talking about celiac disease. About one out of 100 people in the United States have celiac disease, and we are talking about how to deal with it, and we're welcoming your questions. Do you or does someone you know have celiac disease, or are you sensitive to gluten? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with Marilyn Geller. She is CEO of the Celiac Disease Foundation, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are following up on a listener suggestion this hour and doing a program on celiac disease. And tomorrow happens to be Celiac Disease Awareness Day. And we welcome your questions about celiac disease. Do you have it? Do you know someone who does? Even if you don't have full-blown celiac disease, do you believe you are allergic or gluten intolerant? We're talking about the symptoms, the condition, the diagnosis, the treatment, with the head of the Celiac Disease Foundation, and she is here to answer your questions and respond to your experiences. If you call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'd like to hear your experiences. How did you discover you were allergic to or gluten sensitive or intolerant, or if you actually had celiac disease? How difficult is it for you to follow a gluten-free diet if you do? We are trying to share some information and advice about celiac disease. And we have John in La Crosse who says, a family member has medically certified allergies to gluten. We must cook from scratch, as almost all prepared food has wheat hidden in it from some form. The only solution is to cook from scratch at home and do not trust what stores and restaurants tell you if your health depends on it. Marilyn Geller, what's your response to that?
Well, my response to that is restaurant dining is tricky. Because while many restaurants now do have gluten-free menus, because there are so many Americans who are following a gluten-free diet for perceived health reasons, not for medical reasons, when you ask your server about the gluten-free menu, they may not be as vigilant about the cross-contamination issue with the wheat as they need to be regarding a medically necessary diet. So restaurant dining is definitely tricky, and you really have to know your server, and you have to know your restaurant, and there is a great deal of trust that's placed in that relationship. Cooking from scratch at home. You know, the FDA ruling requires that gluten-free products have less than 20 parts per million of gluten in them. And what that means is that if you were going to eat gluten-free bread, you would actually need to eat about 18 slices of gluten-free bread per day before you would cross the threshold that experts think actually might do damage to your gut. So there are a large number of products out there that are testing and are definitely under this 20 parts per million of gluten. My son is, you know, a highly symptomatic celiac, so if he actually gets us what we call glutened, in inadvertent ingestion of gluten, he actually will be ill for 2 to 3 days. And I will say that, you know, I certainly cook from home. There's lots of products that are naturally gluten-free, fruits and vegetables and proteins, rice. But I also use the gluten-free pasta, and I use the gluten-free cereals, and I use frozen gluten-free burritos. And he seems to tolerate those just fine.
Mm-hmm. And when you say that he's sick for days, he just has the GI symptoms of this. And but you say that even that cross-contamination can cause some damage to his gut.
Right, and I always have to embarrass my poor son, who's now 20 and in college, and, you know, poor thing, mommy talking about his tummy troubles. But he does. What will happen is, you know, things like soy sauce. Soy sauce has wheat protein in it. So if he goes out to eat with friends and he goes to a Chinese restaurant and he asks them to make it without soy sauce, sometimes they do, but they may cook it in the same pan that the meal had been prepared in before that had soy sauce, and he does. He gets the gastrointestinal symptoms, but he also gets extreme fatigue and headache, and I can see it put him in bed for 2 to 3 days afterwards.
Yeah. And can you tell us, give us an idea of how, you know, a daily diet for someone who has celiac disease, what you might have for your meals?
Well, like I said, you know, there's lots of products that are naturally gluten-free. So you could get up in the morning and you could have an egg. You could have yogurt. You could have a rice-based cereal. You could have toast with gluten-free bread. You could have a gluten-free muffin. I mean, it's the same diet that you would normally follow because of the fact that there are these gluten-free substitutes. For lunch, you know, you could have a salad and with protein, and that would be completely gluten-free. Or you could, again, have a sandwich with your gluten-free bread. I cook gluten-free at home. I'm a big fan of crock-pot meals as a working mother. So, you know, I'll put the chicken or the beef in the crock-pot with the sauce and make sure that the sauce does not have any wheat protein in it. And, you know, we come home and we have it with potatoes or rice or gluten-free noodles. So really, you know, the diet itself and the cooking is not that much different. It's hard to give up your favorite mouth flavor foods when you're first diagnosed, but the actual cooking part does become very simple and routine.
Yeah, so you say it's hard to give up the, what do you call it?
The mouth flavor. I think that's the word I've coined myself. You know, the substitutes for gluten-free products have, you know, vastly, vastly improved in flavor and texture in the last few years. But, you know, that wheat and that natural elasticity of the gluten that makes the wheat bread or the bread with the wheat in it so fluffy, you know, it is definitely a change getting used to the products that don't have that.
It's interesting because I have tried a couple of gluten-free products just out of curiosity, and they do vary in terms of whether I like them or not. I tried some gluten-free bagels, and I really enjoyed the texture, but then other things were just not quite the same. So I guess it also just depends on the manufacturer of it to some extent.
Right, and what we do at Celiac Disease Foundation is we work with the manufacturers to promote the gluten-free products, to consult with them, and really urge the industry to deliver inexpensive, tasty, nutritious products.
Yeah, they are more expensive. Why is that?
Just a small production because of the number of people who are buying the products versus the number who buy products that have the gluten in them. As the market increases, we do expect the prices to drop.
Yeah. Well, what are your thoughts on someone like me who is just like, well, maybe I'll just try this? Is there anything wrong with going on a gluten-free diet if you don't have necessarily a sensitivity to gluten or celiac disease?
Well, I'm going to answer that in two parts, because if you have a relative with celiac disease or gluten sensitivity, then you really are going to want to get tested, because if you do have celiac disease, there are long-term consequences. People with celiac disease have a much higher risk for developing other autoimmune disorders, like type 1 diabetes, like thyroid disease. And they have vitamin deficiencies, and you have to watch your vitamin D and your calcium intake because of osteoporosis. So you really want to know if you have celiac disease so that you can be monitoring with your physician for all of these other issues that may come up. For those people who do not medically need to be on the diet, you know, there are physicians who will tell you that there are some benefits to it. Women who are going through menopause are told by their OBGYNs that there has been some benefit to eliminating gluten from the diet in regards to the symptoms of menopause. There are people who may not test for celiac disease or wheat allergy who do go off gluten and notice that they feel better. The only caution that we have is a lot of the gluten-free products are not fortified with the B vitamins like their gluten-filled counterparts. So when you do go on a gluten-free diet and it's not for medical reasons, you really do need to be aware of your vitamin levels.
Interesting. So, for example, the vitamin Bs that are thrown into regular cereals are not put into gluten-free cereals?
Right, or they don't naturally occur in the products that are gluten-free.
Oh, okay. Judy in Oshkosh is with us. Hello, Judy.
Hi. No disrespect to your guest, but she's throwing around a lot of statistics that, you know, there's no, I haven't heard where she got her studies from or for information from. And it seems to me that there might be an element of hysteria to some of this gluten-free stuff that a lot of people are making money on. It might be preventing people from getting the proper diagnoses if they can slap an easy label on something. Oh, I must be gluten intolerant. Well, perhaps you have poor hygiene at home, and that's what's giving you the GI upset. Or perhaps, you know, the thing that bothers me the most is when you see parents saying that their children are gluten intolerant as an excuse for bad behavior, you know, and it just seems like it just is so easy to slap a label on something that hasn't been medically verified, and that people have to kind of be careful that, you know, it doesn't become a hysteria. I mean,
Judy, I'm going to let, because we have just a minute before a news break, and we will pick up after news, Marilyn. Is there a gluten hysteria going on?
Well, I do agree with your caller. Absolutely, people should be tested. There should be no self-diagnosis. But the statistic of the 1 in 100 worldwide has been verified by numerous studies, and you can certainly go to our website at celiac, celiac.org, to read the latest research.
We will continue talking about celiac disease and welcoming your questions, your observations, your experiences. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about celiac disease this hour. What it is, what it does, how it's diagnosed and treated, and how people with it eliminate gluten from their diets. And we're welcoming your questions and your own experiences with celiac disease. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, September 12th. This is a listener suggestion, someone who thought that this would be a timely and important show since Celiac Disease Awareness Day is tomorrow. We are talking with Marilyn Geller. She is the CEO of the Celiac Disease Foundation, and she'll answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We had a caller just before news time who was concerned that there was a little bit of what she called gluten hysteria going on, that this was being hyped because somebody's making money off of it. What's your response to that, Marilyn Geller?
Well, there clearly is a fad diet for gluten-free, as evidenced by celebrities who do not medically need to be on the gluten-free diet. And what I say is that, yes, if you switch from a diet full of carbohydrates like muffins and cookies and breads and croissants, and you eliminate those from your diet, and you start to eat just your proteins and your grains like rice and your fruits and your vegetables, you actually will lose weight. I mean, as long as you're not substituting a gluten-free muffin for your regular muffin, you're going to have a decrease in calories, and you will lose weight. So, yes, in that respect, you lose weight on the gluten-free diet. Because of that gluten-free diet fad, it does mask the seriousness of those with celiac disease and gluten sensitivity who medically need to be on a strict gluten-free diet. So is there hysteria? I don't know that I would go to that extreme, but certainly there are people on the diet who do not medically need to be on the diet.
Yeah, and so you advocate, though, that, well, for instance, she said something about parents just blaming their child's bad behavior on gluten. I haven't heard that, have you?
Well, I have to laugh because I had a very grumpy son. My child, until the age of 15, was a very grumpy child. And he was grumpy because his stomach hurt all the time, and nobody believed him that he was really ill. We saw one specialist in Los Angeles who actually told my son, "You need to suck it up and go back to school and get yourself out of bed. I have children who are really sick." Mm. And then lo and behold, he was diagnosed 3 weeks later, and it was a whole different matter. So, yes, there are children out there with celiac disease, with gluten sensitivity, who are grumpy. There are also children who have symptoms of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And there is, if you look at the top 10 symptoms of children with celiac disease, that's in the top 10. So yes, there definitely are children out there who, when they ingest gluten, it makes them miserable. So I can't speak to other parents' behavior, but I was one of those parents with a grumpy child because of the celiac disease.
Yeah. So your advice to parents, if they have a grumpy child and that child has stomach issues and maybe some of the other possible symptoms of celiac disease, is to get that blood test.
Right. There's a campaign now called Consider Celiac. When your pediatrician has run all of those other blood tests and those stool tests and you're not getting an answer, and your child has stomach aches and has fatigue and is achy and is grumpy, by all means, ask for that blood test, the celiac disease blood panel.
Yeah. And what about adults? When should we consider having that blood test?
Well, unfortunately for adults, because, like I said, the most common symptoms are not the gastrointestinal, it does take physicians a lot longer to exhaust everything else. Armed with knowledge, you can go in and request from your physician, particularly if you have a relative. So while it's about 1 in 100 people worldwide, if you have a first-degree relative, it drops down to 1 in 22. So if you have a first-degree relative, and actually, you know what, even if you don't have symptoms, you ought to get tested because the danger of undiagnosed celiac and the long-term consequences of that osteoporosis, that anemia, infertility. 1 in 6 women with infertility actually have celiac disease, and by going on the gluten-free diet, are able to conceive. So again, if you have a relative, even if you don't have symptoms, you ought to be requesting that blood test.
I read that one of the long-term consequences of undiagnosed celiac disease is gallbladder problems.
Yes, there are people who will tell you that they have had their gallbladder removed, and what it is they've actually had celiac disease and did not need to have that gallbladder removed. Once they went on the gluten-free diet, or would have gone on the gluten-free diet, those symptoms would have been alleviated.
Guess who had her gallbladder removed? Anyway, I guess I better have a test. Jack on Facebook asks, my dad has celiac disease, and I have been tested, but came up negative. My wife and I will soon be having our first child, and I'm wondering if there is a screening process for newborns. Can the blood test work on newborns? How old does someone have to be in order to be tested and have accurate results?
Well, there is a blood test, but it's really not accurate until about the ages of 18 months to 2 years. Now, that's not to say that if your child has celiac disease that they're not going to have that child go on a gluten-free diet sooner. But it's a different set of blood testing strategies when the child is younger. And the hard thing is that until a child begins to ingest gluten, it does not really trigger that celiac disease. So you can be genetically predetermined, but that crossover to celiac disease is actually triggered by eating gluten. So there's strategies right now for people who have celiac disease or relative with celiac disease as to when you introduce gluten into the diet of your infant, and you need to work with your pediatrician regarding those guidelines.
Let's take some more calls. We have Maureen in Combined Locks with us now. Hello, Maureen.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call, and I love your program. I'm a 52-year-old woman who was diagnosed with celiac disease in the late 60s, and at that time, it wasn't easy to diagnose. I had a very large belly and stick arms, and I was malnourished, and I spent a week in university hospitals for them trying to figure out what my problem was, and they finally did a biopsy and diagnosed me with celiac disease. And I'm just so thankful that it's easier to diagnose. It's more commonly discussed nowadays. I have friends whose children are miserable or sick, and I ask them, have you, you know, the baby is crying a lot ever since they introduced cereal into their diet. And I'll say, have you thought about checking into celiac disease? So I just wanted to say I'm thankful to how the research and how things have changed. And I'm also thankful to my mother, who back in the 60s and 70s made my lunch gluten-free. And I may have looked like I had a strange lunch, but she went the extra mile every
yeah.
day.
Well, good for Mom. Way to go, Mom. And I'm glad it was. So I suppose that the diet that you followed back in the 60s is different than what people can follow today, Maureen.
Right. Gluten-free food was much less readily available on the shelf. My mother made... When we had spaghetti for dinner, she baked a potato and put my spaghetti over the potato. When the, you know, things like that, she made my food a little bit differently than the rest of the family. you know, and I'm from a large Irish family, and it's very common in Northeastern European genetic makeup, we've discovered. And there's more nieces and nephews every day who are discovering that they have celiac disease in my family.
Yeah, and so thank you very much for calling. Are things a lot better in terms of following this diet for you today? Are there any things that need to still be done as far as you're concerned to make it easier on people with celiac disease?
Well, I do think that having the requirement to have notices on food that it is containing gluten is something the FDA is still considering. And then there's some other requests to have these expenses for gluten-free food be a medically deductible item on your taxes. Those are some things that are larger concerns that I think are still being worked on. I'm not sure where they're at.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Maureen. Do you know, Marilyn?
Well, regarding the tax deduction, it is available, but it's a little complicated. You have to take what your regular gluten-filled food would cost you, and then you can deduct that price from what you pay for the gluten-free food, and then you have to save your receipts, and then it has to be in a certain excess amount of your actual income. So it does exist, but it's so exhausting to go through it that most people opt out of it.
Yeah, and just any other observations of that from Maureen's story?
Well, Maureen, I thank you for sharing your story. And the more people share their story and the more we put celiac disease in the spotlight and the more comfortable we are speaking about it, the more people will get diagnosed. Celiac Disease Foundation has a founder, a woman named Elaine Monarch, who went through a similar process and was not diagnosed until she was in her 50s. And what the foundation has done is in the 90s convened experts from around the world for a serology workshop. And because of that meeting and that serology workshop, that's why we have the blood test that became available in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Now, Maureen thought that there was some, I don't know if it was legislation or a possible FDA rule to label if something has gluten, or was she mistaken there? We talked about the FDA defining what gluten-free labels mean, but manufacturers don't have to say this product contains gluten.
Well, for FDA-regulated products, if it contains wheat, they must put that on the label.
Okay.
So in addition to looking at the ingredient list that will say wheat, there will be a statement that says contains wheat. They do not have to do that for rye or barley, which are also the gluten triggers for celiac disease. But for wheat, they must put on the label the contains wheat statement.
Oh, I mean just the regular ingredient label. They don't have to say if something contains rye or barley?
Not the words contains rye or barley. They still have to list it in the ingredient list, but they do not have to call it out specifically.
Oh, okay. Well, so what should somebody who is gluten intolerant or sensitive or has celiac disease, what should they be looking for when they're looking at these at supermarket box labels?
Well, you have to read the little tiny print. And I have spent many years now in the grocery aisle squinting at little tiny print. And so you are looking for the words wheat, rye, or barley. And malt is a derivative of barley. So when you look at your beer or even your malted milk balls, you need to be careful of that because that is a barley derivative. So wheat, rye, or barley.
We are talking about celiac disease with Marilyn Geller. She's the CEO of the Celiac Disease Foundation. And we're wondering if you have celiac disease or know someone who does. How did you discover this? So what's it been like for you? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, about 10 minutes before 7 o'clock now on this Thursday, September 13th. We are talking about celiac disease with Marilyn Geller, who is the CEO of the Celiac Disease Foundation. We'll get right back to the phones in just a moment, but talking about the show we have coming up in our next hour, Marilyn Geller reminded me that some people who are lactose intolerant are also gluten intolerant, according to some stories I've read recently. Is there a connection?
There is a connection. And for people who are both lactose intolerant and gluten intolerant, what we have found is for a large percentage of them, once their gut begins to heal by being on the gluten-free diet, then they can start to tolerate lactose.
Okay. Let's go next to Patricia in Milwaukee. Hello, Patricia. You're on the air.
Hi. I was diagnosed with celiac about 10 years ago. And my only symptom is that I have osteoporosis. So I think anybody, quite frankly, who goes on a gluten-free diet, who doesn't have to be on one, is completely nuts. It's very expensive if you're buying gluten-free products. Plus the fact that when you go into a restaurant, you can't exactly count on them to say something's gluten-free. You have to ask more questions about how it's prepared and things like that. I went to a restaurant and asked about buffalo wings, which I love but never eat. And they said, oh, no, the sauce is gluten-free and all of that. But I said, well, how do you prepare it? And they said, well, put it in the deep fryer. And I said, well, what else do you put in the deep fryer? And they, of course, put in fish fry and stuff like that. Now, whether that makes a difference or not, I don't know. But to me, that's not gluten-free. You have to ask them, too, is when you're making a hamburger, are you putting it into a separate pan? You're not putting it on the grill. You know, so it's not quite as simple as people would think. And so I figure if you don't need to do this, you really shouldn't.
Yeah.
My comment.
Thank you very much, Patricia. What's your response to that, Marilyn?
Well, dining out is definitely difficult. You know, for people who are eating gluten, for people who are eating on the gluten-free diet for reasons other than a medical need, this issue of the cross-contamination is not important. But for people with celiac disease or non-celiac gluten sensitivity, even that smallest amount. So, yes, you know, you can go to, say, a Mexican restaurant and they fry their chips in the same oil that they fry their chicken nuggets. People with celiac disease or non-celiac gluten sensitivity will get ill.
Oh,
so it definitely is a difficult relationship with restaurants.
And remind us why someone who has osteoporosis is also someone who might have celiac disease.
It's one of the number one symptoms in adults, anemia and osteoporosis being the top two. So again, people think of celiac disease as a gastrointestinal illness, but in adults, the top two are anemia and osteoporosis.
And this is because we're not absorbing the iron or we're not absorbing the calcium?
Right. We're not absorbing the nutrients that we need because the gut has been damaged from the ingestion of gluten.
Mm-hmm. Virginia in Illinois is with us now. Hi, Virginia.
Hi. I was finally diagnosed, maybe 12 years ago. And yes, I had been sick a long time. And it definitely did a job on my bones. I think it was... But what really drives me nuts is you look at a box in a store now, and, of course, years ago it wasn't. You had to really hunt to find something. Now it's written gluten-free all over the front, but you still have to read the ingredients because then at the bottom it says contains wheat.
Well, how can a box be marked gluten-free if it contains wheat, Marilyn?
Well, until October of 2014, the labeling of gluten-free is what they call a voluntary labeling. So in October of 2014, there is a defined standard. There's a defined system of consequence if manufacturers label their product gluten-free when it does not meet that standard. But until October 2014, we all still need to be reading every last ingredient in those products.
Well, that's a crooked thing to do. To put a gluten-free, mark on the front of the box and it contains wheat.
You know, I think what those manufacturers will tell you is that they test and the level of wheat is less than the 20 parts per million that is required by the FDA. But again, until October 2014, that label gluten-free does not have true meaning until October 2014.
Thank you, Virginia, for the call. Laura in Oconomowoc is with us now. Hi, Laura.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to call. I kind of fall into the unique category of being diagnosed. I was diagnosed after having my second son about about 3 years ago and had a lot of fatigue, just kind of foggy feeling, and then I ended up having inflammatory eye issues. It wasn't until my eye doctor caught on that she had a similar patient in my testing and I was positive. So I didn't fall in that normal category of stomach symptoms, GI problems. So it is definitely can be a unique diagnosis and a great lifestyle change after 30-some years when you can do whatever you want and eat whatever you want. But I think just encouragement out there that taking it day by day, I lucked out that I had good resources. Used the Celiac Association and other things, but also I was able to help other friends that had been recently diagnosed too work through understanding what they can eat, what they cannot eat, what are different things to do. So it was hard, but also nice because I could help others once I learned more. So.
Yeah, thank you very much, Laura. So a little different symptom, Marilyn?
You know, she's the second person this week who's told me about the inflammatory eye disease. There are more than 300 symptoms associated with celiac disease. And so, you know, every day we hear stories from people who have that wide range of symptoms. And thank goodness their physicians have thought to have them tested. You know, the support piece is very, very important. Socially, in America, we are all about food. And when you suddenly have to go on a very restrictive diet, it becomes very, very difficult. So Celiac Disease Foundation has chapters and support groups across the country. In addition to working with a registered dietitian or nutritionist so that you can understand how you need to eat, having that support and being with people who eat exactly like you do really, really is a critical piece to accepting and embracing the new lifestyle of gluten-free.
We have just a minute to go, and I'm going to abbreviate an email that we received from Pat. She says, I am a candidate for testing because of arthritis affecting me, but the rheumatologist that I see did not see any need for such a test when I requested it. The medical community needs to get up to date. Thoughts on whether the medical community is up to date on this, Marilyn?
Not to where we need to be. Mm-hmm. There is a statistic now that says for everybody with celiac disease in America, only 1 in 6 are diagnosed. So for 2014, it is the absolute mission of Celiac Disease Foundation to partner with our medical advisory board to educate healthcare practitioners so that they will consider celiac in their practice.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Marilyn Geller is the CEO of the Celiac Disease Foundation. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. We have lots more to come. We are going to be getting two sides to the raw milk debate in Wisconsin coming up after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.